Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Author Talk and Rising Light Media, where we interview some of the most fascinating religious and spiritual authors in the world. Today, our guest is Andrew Walton. He's a pastor in the Presbyterian Church and has served congregations in Georgia, Washington, D.C., and Florida. Walton is currently pastor of Trinity Presbyterian Church, Clearwater, Florida, where he and his wife live. Yeah, I'm laughing because I called him a Baptist yesterday. Today, we're visiting Andrew because of his new book entitled Hidden in His Own Story, Discovering Jesus in the Parable of the Gospel. Welcome to Author Talk, Andrew.
Thanks, Rod.
I want our listeners to know you, Andrew, as a person. I've just mentioned that you're a pastor, but no one starts out just a pastor. Tell us how Andrew Walton became the man that he is today, and did you just wake up one day as a young man and say to yourself, I want to be a minister?
Well, I didn't, but you know, it's close to that. And maybe your intuition is better than you think, Ron, because I started off as a Baptist.
Ah, see, I knew. Yeah. I felt it there.
Yeah, I grew up in a Southern Baptist family, very devout, and it was a you know, learned a whole lot about the Bible, and actually experienced a call into the ministry as a child, but that was on the back burner and went dormant for many years. And I had gone through many phases of faith, as so many people do.
Sure.
As a matter of fact, as a teenager and college student, just left the church altogether. And when I came back into the church, I came back in as a Presbyterian, and I was in my mid-30s when all of this childhood experience sort of came back to me, and I just went through a discernment process there in my mid-30s, and the short version of that is that 37 years old, I entered seminary, Columbia Theological Seminary in Decatur, Georgia, and did a degree there for 3 years, came out at 40, was ordained, and I've been a pastor ever since.
You know, it's interesting, our childhood experiences, this is an interview isn't for me, but when I was a child, my parents were not religious. I was, and I joined the Boy Scout troop at the church, sponsored by the Episcopal Church. I wanted in, I joined the choir, but I couldn't take communion, which is what I desperately wanted, because I had never been baptized, never been confirmed, so they wouldn't do it until my father joined or my mother. My father just said he would do it with me, with protest. And so we went through the confirmation hearings. Tell what's on our minds today, huh?
Yeah.
Went through confirmation. And of course, all I learned there was that Episcopals are just better dressed Catholics. But my experience,
funny.
I left for a long while because I got to the rail. I got baptized that morning with babies, and then I went to the rail for First Communion with other kids and adults, and they don't start communion for the rest of the crowd, the congregation, until the first congregants are done. And I was still there praying because I knew once I had the bread and the wine, I was going to see Jesus. I mean, I don't know what they told me to make me believe it, but that's what I believed.
Wow.
And finally, wow, the priest took me by my elbow, walked me back to the pews because I hadn't seen and I wasn't leaving, so they forcefully took me away. And it took me a long while before I came back to the crowd there. But let's go on. I'm sorry. I just I usurped you. So then you
No. So and let me do add that all those years at my young adult years from college until I went to seminary, I worked in the theater. I was a director, producer, designer, occasional actor. And so I had nearly a 20-year career in the theater before going to seminary.
Well, that sure steads you well with your what you're doing now, communicating with people, I would assume.
Sure. Well, I hope so. I hope so.
Your book, Andrew, is about the parables told by Jesus.
Uh-huh.
And many of Jesus's parables refer to simple everyday things, such as a woman baking bread, parable of uh-huh. the leaven, a man knocking on his neighbor's door at night, parable of the friend at night, or the aftermath of a roadside mugging, parable of the Good Samaritan. Yet they deal with major religious themes such as growth of the kingdom, God, the importance of prayer, and the meaning of love.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you waited until almost the end of your book to tell us that, and I quote, "The Jesus I have discovered and want to tell people about is not the Jesus of my childhood," which you just mentioned,
yeah.
"who had to die to save me and the world from eternal damnation, but rather a flesh and blood person who lived a divinely infused life that leads us to discover, experience, and live the divine life in our for ourselves. And it does this by being fully human." I think this is very important, folks. Like you, this is the Jesus I personally resonate with, and I think that it's so critical we understand this. I could expand for hours, but I want you to tell us why it's important and what the human Jesus was like.
Uh-huh.
Folks, I want you to listen to this, because this was, when I read this book, it blew me away from the very get-go on the concept, because the concept of this book is the teachings of Jesus came from somewhere. They didn't come out of thin air. Go on. I'll shut up. I can talk about your book longer than you.
And I think a good example of this, Ron, is the way we began our conversation today, okay? How did we start our conversation today? By telling stories. And we each told just a little bit of our own lives, our own experience. And those stories, those experiences that we had, are what make us who we are today.
Right.
And at the very core of my book is this idea that Jesus was a human being. And because Jesus was a human being, Jesus would have had his own stories. And his own stories are the experiences that made him who he was. And unfortunately, the quote-unquote canon sort of blots out the time in his life from when he was 12 years old until he was 30.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? And, of course, that has led to stories about that missing period.
And you and I just shared stories of our own lives of that exact time frame, which was extremely formative.
Right, it was pivotal.
And so these years that kind of disappeared, I thought, well, wow. If when I sit down, around a dinner table or a campfire and or an interview with someone like you and start trying to tell people who I am, what do? I tell my stories. And so if Jesus did the same, and if his stories were later developed into, quote-unquote, parables, then we may have a glimpse into that time frame that we had never known about.
I think, and I'm trying to get our audience to really picture this, Jesus was growing up. He ran into problems and false expectations for himself and by others for him, because he was probably a bit of a different child, a capricious or whatever, but he was bright. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
But he was watching life for 20 or 30 years, and those stories didn't come out of thin air, you know?
Gotcha,
Yeah, we read the Gospels. Gospels, everybody should know this. The Gospels weren't written down in the first one, Mark, probably about 70 AD.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to remember what happened. I mean, the world had changed there because the whole center of our faith, the Christian faith, was centered around Jerusalem until then. And with one fell swoop within about a 2-3 year period, the Romans came through, wiped everyone out, including Jerusalem. And if the Christians hadn't escaped before then, and there's some stories of some of them doing that, trust me, they were killed or hauled off into slavery. That's it. So the faith changed tremendously, and people decided they better get this written down. But let's take a look at that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the 30s when he died in AD 30, plus or minus. So the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, 40 years before they started actually putting these down. Now it becomes pretty codified. The stories have been told between people for 40 years, and now they're getting written down, at least in forms that we have seen. So they're codified, but we kind of miss that. What Andrew's picking up is we miss that really, that human touch of Jesus who's sitting there on a hillside. And he says, you know, I had an experience like that. Let me tell you a story. Is
exactly,
that way it goes?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Let me share something, Ron, right here to sort of piggyback on your comments there. And this comes from the preface of my book, which is actually, I call it the backstory, okay? And it, the paragraph says, among all the scholarship and words, all we really know about the man Jesus of Nazareth, beyond what is in the Bible and other religious texts, is that he lived, had a brother named James, and was crucified by the Roman prefect Pontius Pilate for insurrection. We know these things primarily from two brief extra-biblical references, one the Jewish historian Flavius Josephus, and the other the Roman historian Tacitus. All else we know about Jesus comes from people who believed him to be the Messiah to the Jewish people and or the Christ of Christianity, i.e., God in the flesh. In most cases, these believers are quite upfront about making a case for their beliefs. So see, all we have in the Bible, the biblical record is not really about the man, Jesus. It's about the man believed to be the Messiah and
right.
or the Christ.
Right.
So my book is trying to get back behind that.
Yeah, and another subject we should talk about offline eventually, you know, is Paul. Paul was we took another step further away from the human Jesus when Paul began to write.
Oh, absolutely. And it's a totally different story.
So, totally different story. He didn't know Jesus.
Which, by the way, had already taken place before the gospel accounts were written.
Absolutely, by a decade at least.
Exactly.
Paul didn't even consider it really terribly important. Otherwise, he would have talked about it, but he didn't.
Right. But see, my objective in the book here, Ron, all of what we're talking about is extremely important and very, very interesting, okay, and controversial in Christian circles. But that's not what I really wanted the book to be about. I wanted to mention those things at the beginning, but what I really want us to get into are these stories.
And I will interrupt you there because there's another short quote, and we'll go directly to those stories.
Uh-huh.
You wrote, even the most clever storyteller or writer of fiction can never totally disguise or deny their own personal influence on the story, which means that when Jesus told a story, he probably either experienced it in real life or observed it. So here we go, Andrew. Do you have a copy of your book with you?
I do.
Well, I'll be darned. Why don't you pick an example from your book, tell us a story you think that might have occurred to Jesus during his early life, before he started teaching, during that first roughly 30 years of his life, and then afterwards quote the parable from one of the Gospels, which starts on page 69, if you didn't know that, Andy, that resulted. And
okay.
Then I'm going to take the opposite with you, and I'm going to go backwards.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to pick a short one, okay? And I'm just going to read it as I have told it in the book. And it begins. And this is Jesus telling the story now. Rarely did I ever know my mother to be overly anxious or afraid. However, on those occasions when she was anxious, the joy that she normally exuded was transformed into intense determination and persistence. One night, I awoke to my parents' voices. "Mary, what are you doing?" Papa whispered so as not to wake my brother or sister and me. "I've lost something." Her voice was hushed and deliberate. I saw her sweeping the floor by lamplight. "Well, what could be so important? Wouldn't it be easier to find it in the daylight?" Papa asked. "Well, it probably would, but I dropped a coin to the floor just before lying down to sleep and after putting out the lamp. It is the only money we have and will buy our food for several days. I cannot rest or sleep until I find it." "Well, can I help?" Papa sighed. "You go back to sleep. There's no need for you to worry. I will find it." From the shadows on the edge of the lamplight, I saw her search for that lost coin. As anxious as she was, she remained calm and focused. My own anxiety began to subside. I had seen that confident belief before and could hear her say to me, "Jesus, if you believe something with all your soul and mind and body, you will see your belief become reality." "How do I do this, Mother?" I had asked. "Well, first you feel it deeply. Next you think it thoroughly. And then you take action as if it is already done." I fell asleep knowing she would find the coin because she believed she would. I awoke to laughter in the courtyard outside our house. Mother told her friends about sweeping for hours in the lamplight and finally finding the lost coin. Her voice filled the air with joy. I breathed in the joy of her laughter and also the strength of her faith and secretly thought, that coin was never lost because my mother always believed it would be found.
Now,
the parable is, one version of it is in Luke chapter 15, verses 8 through 10. And again, this is Jesus talking. "Or what woman, having 10 silver coins, if she loses one of them, does not light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it? When she has found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors, saying, 'Rejoice with me, for I have found the coin that I had lost.' Just so, I tell you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents."
And there's the lesson.
Yeah.
Right. Now, as we go on, it's my turn.
Okay.
I'm going to pick a parable, and you tell me what the story you think might have elicited the telling of the parable like that.
Okay, good.
This is the parable of the lost sheep, Luke 15, 1 through 7. Both the Pharisees and the scribes begin to grumble, saying, "This man receives sinners and eats with them." So he told them this parable, saying, "What man among you, if he has 100 sheep and has lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the open pasture and go after the one which is lost until he finds it? When he has found it, he lays it on his shoulder, rejoicing. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and his neighbors, saying to them, 'Rejoice with me. I have found my sheep, which was lost.' I tell you that in the same way, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance." Okay, Andrew, what kind of life event can you imagine that might have buried that story in his mind for him to tell later to his followers and onlookers?
Well, it just so happens that on page 35 of my book, Jesus tells that story from his childhood. And I won't take the time to read it because this is a longer one. But basically, I have Jesus telling a story of a time when he and his brother were taking care of sheep, and it was time to go home. They counted the sheep, and one of them was missing. And Jesus goes back to where they had been, climbing through rocks and brush, and he finally hears the sheep bleeding. But it has fallen down a cliff, and he looks over the cliff, and it's way down below. And Jesus, using a series of ropes, his knapsack and his robe, makes a long rope and climbs down that cliff where that lamb is on the ledge. And he spends the night with that lamb on that ledge. And the next morning wakes up, and using the same rope that he had made, he takes that lamb and climbs back up the cliff and takes the lamb home.
What would have elicited these parables in Jesus' teachings? And it has to be out of a past life. You don't make it up out of whole cloth. And it's fascinating. People don't have to take your word for it. They probably can make up their own stories, but just thinking through their lives, right? Yeah, because we all have these stories to tell. It's just that Jesus had an ability to transfer these common everyday lessons that he learned as he grew up into life lessons for everyone that could hear.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's amazing. You know, you can find the same thing. Have you heard of the Gospel of Thomas?
Oh, sure. Of course.
Well, most people haven't, of course. Mm-hmm. But the Gospel of Thomas is another gospel that was written probably, it's one of the older ones, because it's what we call a sayings gospel. Later gospels tried to tie the stories together and put a life of Jesus, fill in the blanks. It wasn't just the Jesus said this, Jesus said that, Jesus said this. They later gospels made a story out of it. Jesus was walking down the hill and talked to the people.
Yeah.
And it was more palatable. But the early ones, they call it the sayings gospel, and they call Thomas as the sayings gospel. So it's just a collection. But it's fascinating because the gospel creates the story of Jesus' life. It contains 114 of these sayings, and 11 of them are exactly the same parables found in Matthew and Mark and Luke.
Exactly. Uh-huh.
And so you can find these stories everywhere. Jesus was filled with these wonderful stories that people remembered. They're powerful, and they remembered them. So there were just a couple of them. There were the parable of the ear of grain, the parable of the grain of wheat, mm-hmm. parable of the date palm shoot.
Yeah.
I mean, they're fabulous little things. So if you get the Gospel of Thomas, it's available in any bookstore. You can read about some of these things, and you can do the same thing. You can read now behind it. I know that you're shocked when I tell you that the time for our session together is gone. It's gone. It goes so fast when we're having fun, Andrew. And I wanted to say thank you so very much for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. My pleasure.
And for all of our listeners and readers, because we also put the transcript and on the site. I hope you pass this out of church so people listen to you.
Yeah.
And come to the website. And its book is called The Hidden in His Own Story. Hidden in His Own Story. Subtitled Discovering Jesus in the Parables of the Gospels. That's Andrew Walton, Walton. If you go to our website, you will discover it. We will find it there, and you can buy the book directly from there. It'll jump you right to the publisher, and you can get the book sent out to you ASAP. I can't thank you enough for being with us today, Andy, and best of luck on your book.
Well, thank you very much. And as I say toward the close of my comments in the book, I just hope that everybody that reads this can allow Jesus to be more human, and in doing so, discover our own humanity, and in doing that, discovering the presence of God in our lives and all the stories.
It's there.
Lives.
He's already working in our lives, folks. We are not different than Jesus. Of course we are, but do you know what I'm saying? We are the same.
Oh, yeah, it's, I think Richard Rohr capitalizes this in a quote that I use in the book. He says, Jesus came precisely to put it all together for us and in us. He was saying, in effect, to be human is good. The material and the physical can be trusted and enjoyed this world is the hiding place of God and the revelation of God.
Amen. I'm not going to add one more word to that. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us again on Author Talk. I really am grateful for you having been with us today. I hope you join us again next week as we continue on our quest to find God, the divine. For now, this is Ron Way for Author Talk saying God bless.